there's tests, but you take it out. So he gives you like 10 questions that are all like short answer.
10 questions.
That are short answers and open ended. And you answer it and you give it back to him by like the end of the week. That's the best.
Sounds like QTM 110.
QTM 110?
Yeah, the test format.
Yeah, they're not easy though, you know. Like when they the question puts that like give an example. So I give an example of a reason, not a real life example. I lost like people like 5 points. It's not fair. ChatGPT, you said not to use it. Yeah, I said don't use it.
I said
don't use it. Yeah, but it says give an example, right? Do you think AI would think that
we'll get real world with
that? Yeah, but I didn't know that, that's the thing. For you to use AI correctly, you have to know what to ask. Right?
Yeah.
Unless it has its own consciousness, which can't happen. It can happen, right? You're not doing it, right?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
All right.
Assignment. What do you think? Don't overwhelm me with responses.
I think so. No, like you're just like following the same rules. It's just like condensing information, but pretty much it's like the same process as like coming up with the details.
Except you don't need to quote the raw text anymore.
Yes.
You don't need to do that. But yeah, it's the same process. So it felt familiar.
Yes.
All right. Everybody looked as though they understood how to do this, and no real problems. I located Taylor's themes. So it will be interesting to see how you stack up to Taylor's themes. Now, keep in mind that Taylor's themes include all 20 interviews, not just two. So we would expect not only more themes, but also maybe slightly differently worded themes, because you guys created themes from only two of those interviews rather than 20. So Taylor had the benefit of 10 times more interviews than you did. All right, so I want to keep that in mind. But let's look at what Taylor has here. So she has how many themes?
does she have? I found her dissertation and then I, oops, and then I copied and pasted these themes into this document. So there are 12 themes, and what did, so on page 65, Auerbach and Silverstein wrote, how many themes should you have? Although there's no hard and fast rule, we suggest reducing the number of repeating ideas by a factor of 3 or 4, resulting in from 10 to 20 themes with an average of 15. And she has 12, so she's right there. Excellent job, Taylor. You must have had a really good dissertation committee.
Didn't she have like 78 repeating ideas?
I don't remember.
It was more than 60 or 8.
Well, how many do you think she had? So let's see, on page 60, there are no hard festivals, but we have found that something in the neighborhood of 60 is a workable number with a minimum of 40 and a maximum of 80. And how many do you think she had?
It was high for sure.
Over 80?
No, it was like 70.
It was like 70 something, yeah.
So she's still in the range. Or 3. Yeah. All right. So theme 1. Let's see what she has. She has defense mechanisms. Anybody have that one? Childhood experiences. And by the way, in you see here that she has the number of interviews that that theme appeared in over the total number of interviews, and then she created a percentage. So the percentage of interviews that included that theme. And you'll see they're all
72 repeating ideas.
What's that?
Taylor had 72 repeating ideas.
72.
So a lot, but still
right there.
Range.
Right there.
She divided by 4 is 18 then.
What?
72 divided by 4 is 18.
Okay, and she had 12. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Okay.
Defense mechanisms, childhood experiences, family impact on alcohol use, alcohol glamorized by society, I need it, questioning relationship with alcohol, health issues related to alcoholism, alcohol caused problems in my life, comorbidity, mental health issues paired with alcoholism, seeking help after hitting rock bottom, tools to stay sober, connections, community, support system, and recovery, 95%. Only one interview didn't mention that. And I would bet that one interview, that person relapsed. And theme 12, sobriety improved my life, positive experiences since being sober, sobriety made my life better. All 20 interviewees stated that. Now what's interesting here, that I find interesting, is that I don't see any themes related to spirituality, which I find puzzling, given the fact that I think most of these people found 12-step programs to be helpful, and spirituality is the centerpiece of 12-step programs. But I don't know, Elisa, you've read all 20 interviews because you were a coder for Taylor. Was spirituality much of a theme in any of the interviews?
I don't feel like it was a prominent theme that I saw in all of them. However, I do think that it was brought up, especially in like the tools for recovery kind of aspect. And I think it was less religious, more spiritual in nature. So a bit more just like references to small things or kind of like transcendence, but not really like really religious things, but a lot of them do mention AA, which I think is kind of like religiously affiliated, right?
Well, not religious, but certainly spiritual.
Yeah. Almost all of them mention AA. So I'm assuming that spirituality is somewhat of an aspect, but less of them talked about it like more in depth than that.
Right. You know, AA is all about placing your trust in a higher power. So I don't know how much more spiritual you can get, but it's interesting that spirituality didn't really materialize very, very much in these 20 interviews that Taylor used.
I think when they mentioned AA, it felt more like they mentioned it as a form of social support rather than like spiritual support.
Right.
Interesting.
Okay. It could be that so these people were being interviewed publicly and for a podcast, and maybe they felt a little bit embarrassed about, you know, coming out with their spirituality. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a stigma often attached to spirituality in our society, and so they might have felt a little bit reluctant to come out as spiritual. I don't know. That's a hypothesis. I don't know if that's true or not. Justin, you think that might be the case?
Definitely on like a podcast where people are listening to it again. I think it's more of an intimate disclosure to be spiritual.
Yeah, I agree with that. So that might account for the complete absence of spirituality in these themes, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to find it in the stories. Trust me, spirituality is very prominent in these stories that you're going to be coding. That's not any secret that I'm sharing. It'll hit you right in the face. So, any comments about these 12 themes? Now that you've seen them all, how do they compare with the themes that you all created for the assignment? You see some overlap?
I'm curious about her rock number 9, so seeking help after hitting rock bottom. Do the people that the interviews, the sample capture, they say I hit rock bottom and then go from there? Does she identify and estimate that they've hit rock bottom now? Something like that. I don't figure what I'm saying. It's kind of like none of the stories we've read has said, well, I hit rock bottom here.
So they don't use the actual term rock bottom.
It sounds like this theme, she's identifying that rock bottom's already been hit and now something's changing.
Yeah, I think even if the term rock bottom isn't being used, that some terminology that might be equivalent to that term might be used, like I hit the lowest point of my life, or you know, I did this and this, and then I knew that either I was going to die or I had to change, and I made a decision. You know, so maybe they articulated an equivalent idea without actually using the term rock bottom, which would count.
Yeah. I was just trying to work how specific it needs to be to like identify it and put it in a theme.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, Elisa, you want to add anything to that? The idea of this rock bottom the term wasn't mentioned in some of the interviews.
Yeah, so if you actually listen to the podcast itself, that was something that I kind of chose to do as I was going through. And they're really more just discussing their stories in general. Like the point of the podcast, I think, is just to spread awareness about like the fact that people actually do go through this and what their experiences are like. And, you know, I think it brings a lot of people comfort in the fact that their stories end up being similar, or, you know, they have stories that are kind of vulnerable that they're sharing. I think that rock bottom is actually like a pretty understudied topic, or at least in that exact terms. Because when I've looked it up in the past, I haven't really found a lot of studies that are particularly looking at like rock bottom. So I don't know usually covering that moment within their story, as it seems to be a pretty big part of people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Right, so how does that resonate with people? I know that, I think two abstracts, two of the four that we're gonna be presenting, hopefully, at APA have to do with rock bottom. So it's encouraging to hear Elisa say that there isn't much of a literature, at least in the AA literature, about rock bottom. That means there's a gap that we're filling. And trust me, if it's not so much in the AA literature, it really isn't in the SA literature, because the SA literature by definition is smaller than the AA literature is huge. The SAA literature is comparatively small. So if rock bottom is not so prevalent in the AA literature, it's really, really not prevalent in the SAA literature. Maybe some of you already explored that in a lit review. So that's good news for us. That means what we're doing is, it's even more important as a contribution to the literature. For those of you who highlighted rock bottom in your abstracts, any other comments about these themes? I thought it was interesting that one of the themes, number six, health issues related to alcoholism, only 55% of the interviews cited health issues. Now we know that there are plenty of health issues, like cirrhosis of the liver is the most famous one, infamous I should say, for alcoholism. Cirrhosis of the liver is really quite common. Now it's possible that all these folks who were interviewed were relatively young, and maybe they hadn't had a drinking career that lasted 40 years. I don't know. Savannah, maybe you could comment. You're in nursing school. You study the health effects of alcoholism.
It's funny, that's kind of like the general population of my last rotation was stroke victims, comorbid with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. It seems to amplify every effect. Everything fails. Like every organ system is intensely
compromised.
Affected by
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So cardiovascular.
Like everything. Even
yeah.
down to like their skin and their hair.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Like so much, like gigantic increase in the rate of like ulcers. In someone where if you leave them in a bed for one day, they'd be fine without a pressure ulcer, but their body like rapidly deteriorates.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And these are older patients or even in younger patients?
Some of them are like metastatic cancer throughout their body in their 30s, comorbid with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. That was crazy to see.
Interesting that only just 11 of the interviews talked about health
right.
issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would have guessed maybe more. But anyway, all the other themes are very widely represented among the 20. And, Taylor just randomly selected the 20 interviews. I mean, I don't know, how many total interviews are there, Elisa, on the bubble hour?
The podcast itself?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a ton.
Like hundreds?
I can look it up now.
Of course, they're obviously more now than there were when Taylor did her dissertation, but it's a lot. She just randomly selected 20 and got theoretical saturation after 20, but you're all welcome to go to the Buffalo Hour and listen to some yourself. So what I want to do now is if it's okay with Elisa, I'm going to pull up your themes. All right. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, I can't tell how many there are because it doesn't give me like episode numbers.
Okay.
But there's a lot of stories on here. I think it started before COVID, and then it's recently ended the podcast, I think.
Oh, it's no longer. Okay.
Yeah. I think it ended at the start of 2023.
Okay. All right. So here are Elisa's themes. Now remember, when Elisa was on the coding team, she brought her themes in, and there was a consensus among, there were two or three coders, I can't remember.
So including Taylor Free.
Yeah, and who was the third?
Teresa.
Teresa, yes. It was, Teresa, by the way, was an undergrad. Oh, and you were an undergrad too. So two undergrads and a doctoral student comprised the coding team, and these were the themes that Elisa came up with. Family life, childhood impact, well, we already saw that. Tools to stay sober, we saw that. Anxiety, I don't think that one made it into the final round. But, community, connection, yep. Parenting, I don't remember that one. This made my drinking worse, I think there was some of that. Negative view of self, comorbidity, yep. Sobriety made my life better, yep. Escape, events leading to recovery, recognizing the problem. Health, weight issues, yeah. Challenges in trying to recover, and society influences. So you see there were some differences there, and that's the reason why you have a coding team, so that the people on the team can collaborate on creating the ultimate themes that are accepted for your publication or presentation. So Elisa had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So she had 13 and Taylor had 12. So you see right in the sweet spot there. And I don't remember how many repeating ideas you had. Do you remember, Elisa?
I do not. I want to say that I had in the 80s. So I think I had a lot.
Okay. Well, you obviously boiled them down and made them more concise to the number you have here. So
that's great.
I can look now.
So how do you guys respond to these themes?
Yours were more specific or more abstract?
Mine were more abstract.
Than these?
Yeah. I think mine was trying to cover even more in general.
Okay, so maybe yours would be what we would consider to be theoretical constructs, which is the next level of abstraction.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are those, so I know this is repeating ideas, so are those just like the title of the repeating ideas?
These are the title of the themes, you mean?
Like not the bolded ones, the ones next to it.
Yes. Right, Elisa, the second and third are the second and third columns in your document repeating ideas.
Yes, which okay. I had 87 of, by the way.
87. So
yes.
Daniel, you would say thumbs down, right? This is not an exact science like quantitative. It's a little bit more loosey-goosey. So you can see how she derived her theme labels from her repeating ideas. And I'm sure there are more than two repeating ideas per theme, but you just picked out two very representative ones, right?
I think my the whole spreadsheet actually does have all of them in line with it. I don't know why it's not.
Oh,
sure
okay. I think.
Fully, but.
Yeah, I think what I did was I converted the Excel spreadsheet into a PDF, and the PDF, probably this is all the PDF converted. So it didn't convert the other columns. I'm guessing.
I think it had about 5 per thing, and then some more, some less.
Right, okay. Oh, here we go. It did convert, it's not horizontal, it's all vertical. So for theme 1, you see repeating idea 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So I think there were up to 8 repeating ideas per theme. Some of them didn't have 8, some did. Is that right, Elisa?
Yeah, some of them had less than, you know, 8 or 5, less than 5 even, and then some of them had, I think up to 8 was the most I had.
Right. And, you know, the minimum obviously has to be 2. One from one interview and the other from another, right? But the maximum could be any number. And if there's only one repeating idea that doesn't go with another, what do we call that? An orphan repeating idea, okay? And we can save those in a separate document and then maybe choose to do something with them later on. We can look at the orphan repeating ideas and see whether, you know, there's something that we want to include in our final draft of our narrative, which is the ultimate goal of writing a narrative that addresses our research concern, and from which we could generate a hypothesis for a future quantitative study. All right. Any other questions?
So I have like one theme that has way more ideas than the rest.
Yeah.
Comparatively, at least.
What's the name of that theme?
And mine are more like constructs, you said, but it's patterns of behavior that contribute to addiction. And I have like 8 of them. Well, the other ones all have 3, maybe 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be a sign to break it up and try to turn that into another theme?
If you read through the repeating ideas, we could all as a team here see whether there are boundaries that we could draw. There might not be. In which case, I mean, it's okay. I mean, you see here, Elisa had 8, some of them had 8 repeating ideas. Of course, she coded 20 interviews. You guys had only 2. But name, you know, list the repeating ideas and we could talk about it.
Sure. So I have, this is from Shelley and Barry. So it was negative outcomes, significant relationships other than their parents, caregiving and people pleasing, perfectionism/overachiever, and then like clinical severity in addiction, so it was a really bad tendency, which resulted in what you have, hospitalization or the law enforcement, dissociation, mistrust, and the last one is their own personality, and they're confused about their personality.
Okay, so I already have some ideas about how to break it up, but I want other people to have an opportunity. Anybody? We're going to have to do this in real life in a few weeks.
It's not a shot at me either. So
what?
It's not a shot at me either, so critique it, please.
You think that's what people are worried about?
I'm confused about personality. Mistrust or paranoia or something like that.
And is that what she was talking about? They were talking about her past, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was distrustful.
Yeah.
I think for that one, and as well as the people pleasing one, I had it under like a similar theme about childhood experiences and just like something like those.
specifically mental health one. Mm-hmm. I would argue that a lot of these are mental health.
Yeah. But like when they talk about like depression and anxiety specifically, or like,
or
something
like that. Yeah, I had one that was like addiction used to fill in, and I had a lot of emotional connections under there. That's probably more maybe a construct idea. I don't know. Like I have hopelessness, isolation, abuse, emotional connection, all under that. Say more about the personality. What are you thinking about that?
There's like you, right? Before you drink, and there's the you that after you drink. Maybe they're confused about it, but like they really know who they are, like what they drink, you know, other people tell them that, you know, they,
mm-hmm.
like you're not you when after you drink or something. So there's you that you understand yourself, and then there's the you that you gain from because other people talk about
it. Yeah. I see what you're saying. I think, I don't remember what the repeating idea was, I have to go back to what. It was like something like when I looked in the mirror, they didn't know who they were. They didn't recognize themselves, something like that, like body. Image something to that effect. They didn't really know who they were anymore. Okay. Would it be smart to like keep percentages like that? Like, I'm forgetting her name, I'm sorry.
Elisa?
Well, maybe Elisa, like the percentages next to how many people want to reach idea, reach the end. I feel like 90% of the sample had this. Is that a good idea to try to keep track of?
I think it's better to not to have a final number, and then you're trying to achieve that final number. I think it's best to just work as we're doing, and then when we're done, then we calculate the percentage and see where we're at with that. If we work toward a percentage, then we might be fudging the data.
What are your ideas on?
So my idea was that you're talking about in some of these repeating ideas, you're talking about personality. So, but then you're talking about more clinical phenomena, like symptomatology. You talk about hospitalization and mental health outcomes. So I distinguish personality from mental health outcomes, or symptomatology. And it's really the difference between in grad school, studying personality psychology versus clinical psychology. So graduate schools distinguish those PhDs. You can get a PhD in personality or clinical. And I'm hearing that distinction in these repeating ideas. So that was my thought. But I hear people kind of saying the same thing. So let's take that just an example. So let's make this distinction of the personality theme and clinical theme. How many repeating ideas of the eight would fit in each category? If those were our themes.
Like the personality themes would be like caregiving and people pleasing,
mm-hmm.
and perfectionism.
Yep.
Confused personality.
Yep. Well, confused personality, that could go either way.
Right. And then like the maybe mistrust piece.
Yep.
Right. And then you also have like the clinical severity and the relationships are negative.
Right.
So something about the actions or
behavior.
Mm-hmm. I guess separating like that would be, for me, my mind's like trying to divorce the, like I feel like they kind of both go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm getting stuck, I guess. I see the distinction you're saying.
Yeah. I think at a higher, more abstract level, like the theoretical construct, they would come together.
But for the, I guess you're saying like this level, keep them separated off.
Yeah. And you do want to keep not one eye on percentages, but maybe one eye on the total number of themes. In accordance with Auerbach and Silverstein's guidelines about how many themes you need to end up with, basically. But as they say, there are no hard and fast rules.
Yeah.
a lot of this is subjective, and it's going to depend on the group conversation, and it's a collaborative effort. So I appreciate the people who contributed to this particular conversation, that we're going to be doing that a lot in the coming weeks when we break up into our teams. Your themes are totally different. You mind if I pull them up?
Oh, sure. I guess the tools of recovery are out there.
Okay. So we have here, how many themes do we have? We have 11, right?
Yep.
11 themes. Okay, so let's see what you have.
Is there a reason why you keep the show in Python?
Why what?
It has the backwards P in the line there. Why do we have
that? Oh, that's in Word. There's a little paragraph sign that you can click on, and I like to see exactly where my spaces are in my document. So that's a personal setting.
Themes for rock bottom: losing important people, poor relations with family members, traumatic experiences that direct the course of life, alcohol and other drugs impacting life, social systems and external help in recovery, using AA to aid in recovery. So there, number six, maybe you could generalize that a little bit to other tools. AA is one tool. Or you could combine five and six. AA, you could consider that a social system. Feelings, emotions, and mood. That's a little bit too vague, I think. Identity, helping people, resetting life to start a better one. Psychological and other internal tools of recovery. And then orphans, demographics, background, signs, hobbies, activities, work. Good. I mean, I see a lot of parallels here. What do people think about Daniel's list?
Does it look similar to a lot of the themes that have been discussed already?
Yeah, I think it's just showing the difference in our writing, like our personalities. Like, we can all be saying the same thing, just like different variations of words.
Yeah, I don't think you're that far off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Elisa, you think this is in the ballpark, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And I like how you included your repeating ideas underneath each one to support the theme that you've identified, that you've labeled. Now, is this all the repeating ideas, or do you have other ones too?
These were all of them.
All of them, okay. Great.
They were not supposed to be all of them.
No, I mean, you saw how Lisa did hers. Any questions about Daniel's list?
I guess maybe improving theme number seven.
Theme number seven. Yeah, I think just that's feelings, emotions, and mood. I mean, feelings and emotions are, how do you distinguish those two words?
I don't know, so it couldn't be good.
And then mood, it just seems a little too vague.
Yeah.
Maybe, how can we improve that?
let's see. Depression, unhappiness, resolving feelings of shame, feelings of gratitude, feeling hopeless or lacking people or solutions to solve problems. Oh, solutions to problems. Learning to manage emotions and stress. How about dysregulated emotions leading to addiction? Mm-hmm. So the one that wouldn't fit then would be feelings of gratitude. And I wonder whether you could fit that somewhere else. Like resetting life to start a better one would involve gratitude.
Because if you're grateful, then you're happy with the things you have, you know? So it wouldn't be like resetting.
Resetting, let's say you feel resentful.
Yeah.
So resentment is a major feature of addiction. Not just alcohol.
Yeah.
All addictions have resentment as a major feature. And for me, the opposite of resentment is gratitude. And so gratitude would be the resetting of resentment in recovery.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
Right, so feeling like you're getting something that you don't deserve. You're getting a new lease on life. Whereas before, you're holding grudges. You're saying, oh, this one screwed me over. My parents make it impossible for me to be sober. Look how they treated me as a child. I wish they were dead. That's resentment.
Yeah, that's like resetting your view on life.
Exactly.
I was thinking a little different. Like,
yeah.
Life has more like things that you do.
Yeah, but could you expand it to include feeling, a change in feeling, to gratitude?
Probably.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, one of the things I would put in is, the social systems has both like problems with the law but also online tools for recovery at the same time. Maybe I'm seeing an either or category, but there's like a positive group and a negative group.
Mm-hmm.
In that.
Yeah.
So maybe you can pull it out further to there's positive systems and negative systems happening in that person's life. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah. I like that.
And it's similar to your gratitude, if there's a positive emotion, it's a recovery, or there's negative ones.
Yep. You know, these conversations we're having are really, really important because the samples that we're going to be coding are not terribly different, all right? In fact, there's a theory that suggests that all addictions have a final common pathway, and they actually recruit the same neural mechanisms. So, you know, we're going to be seeing a lot of the same themes, I think, in the food addicts and the sex addicts. And so these conversations we're going to be having over and over again, just applied to our specific addiction. But it's going to happen. Right? So, this is good that we're talking about this. I like Justin's contribution here, that, you know, there are positive emotions, positive behaviors, and there are negative emotions, negative behaviors. And I would imagine that those two themes are really divided by rock bottom. That's the line that divides them, right? Once you hit rock bottom, you start a life of positivity and positive behaviors. The point of decision. That make sense? The big difference, I think, is going to be this idea of spirituality. I think that's going to be different from what we're seeing here. That's going to play a major role. That'll be at the level of a theoretical construct, that's my guess, for in both groups, the food addicts and the sex addicts. And it could be that, like we said, and we maybe put this in our posters, that the authors of these stories are anonymous. We don't know who they are. You know, they're
we don't know their names or anything like that. Whereas the bubble hour, these folks could be recognizable by the sound of their voice, even if they haven't given their real names. Their voice is out there, and anybody who listens could recognize, and they might feel a little bit stigmatized to be out there saying, I believe in a higher power. You know, as Justin pointed out, it's more intimate self-disclosure that they might not want out there to be attached to their voice. So I think there are differences in the methodology that might be reflected in the content of the themes. That's what I'm saying. So that's something to keep in mind. You might want to include that in the poster discussion section. It's good to keep in mind. Any other questions? Okay, so here's what we're going to do for 2 weeks. So next week, no lab. How about that? You have a happy Thanksgiving. And so we'll reconvene in 2 weeks, and here's what I want you to do. So I think you've read, I think, a total of 6 interviews. Am I right about that? Is that correct? So take your repeating ideas from the remaining 4 interviews. So that's, I don't remember these people's names anymore. I think Darcy was one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
4 other people. I'll look it up. But you should have your repeating ideas for the 2 and the 2. Mm-hmm. So take those 2 lists of repeating ideas and merge them into themes. And if you guys all do well on that, on this assignment, we'll move on to theoretical constructs. Okay? And then hopefully it'd be great if we could like actually start in our groups before the Christmas break. The holiday break, sorry.
So we are making a theme document for 4 people. Is that what you're saying?
4 interviews. Yes.
Okay, I see.
But 2 lists of repeating ideas.
Yeah, 2 lists of repeating ideas combined to 1.
Yes, okay. Correct.
And
yes, the Monday after next Monday. Correct. So you got an extra week. Dolores, you had a question.
No, we have 2 lists of themes, right?
What's that?
So it's going to be 2 separate documents. Mm-hmm. Or just 1.
You're going to be looking at 2 documents, but you're going to be one document with themes.
Yeah.
But you're taking the 2 documents that you already have and repeating ideas from 2 interviews and another 2 interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be looking at those 2 documents and then creating 1 document with themes that are based on the repeating ideas from the 2 documents mm-hmm. that you've already created.
This is very clear.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Karen.
I have a question. I think you have addressed this before, but how many repeating ideas can you have on your interview?
As many as you
have like 8 or
Yeah, well, Justin was asking that question too. So when you have a lot under a theme, you want to ask the question Justin asked himself, which is, how might I be able to divide these repeating ideas into multiple themes, more than 1 theme? Can I do it? And in Justin's case, we did think of a way to do it, right? Personality versus mental health / behavior issues. Yeah, sure. What do you think? Think this is going to work? Think you can do it? Because, you know, it's 4 interviews. You guys will be working 40-something stories. So I'm hoping that you can do it. Although the stories are, as I mentioned last week, are much, much, much shorter than the interviews. Any final questions? If not, we can end early.
You said something about there's a common neural system.
Final common pathway.
Yeah.
Can you really like get there but going backwards though? That feels
some
weird.
Some research suggests that addictions, no matter what they are, whether they're substance or behavioral, commandeer the same neural pathways. The nucleus accumbens, for instance, is involved. It's implicated in all addictions. So
you're saying that
it's not without controversy, but there's a theory that there is a final common pathway.
Right. But so like if we get to the very end, so we end up at the theoretical construct, it's gonna have to do something with the common neural path.
No, not at all. We're focusing on the data, right? This grounded theory. So we're starting from the ground and we're building up. We're not coming from the top down. So we're using literature to formulate our research concern. But from there, we're building from the bottom up. We're not coming down with, we have to arrive at the final common pathway. That's not how this works. Okay?
As of for last week, I know that we added in recognized the rule of the number of repeating or texts that we're using or each repeating idea. But we said for the themes that we did last week, just keep it how we had the first week and don't go back and edit it. Really, it wasn't necessary. For the week following, if I'm reading through my ideas and my start to create themes and I see something that doesn't fit,
absolutely, I like that. So if you're going through this and you see what your work was before it, and there's some relevant text that you placed into a repeating idea that you think belongs in a different repeating idea, go ahead and make those changes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we're going to be doing that in real life.
Mm-hmm.
When we really code the actual stories.
Yeah, the textbook says that you're allowed to do that.
Absolutely.
And that's what I think people complain about. I did all this work and have to go back or something like that. But it was some mention of
How accurate do you want your poster to be?
I'm just saying that's what the textbook says, that it's supposed to be normal, that backwards and change stuff.
Right. That's all part of the process, revising and editing and revising and editing until your final product should reflect the stories of these participants as accurately as possible.
Mm-hmm.
With as little theoretical interference as possible. Like the idea of final neural pattern.
That was weird. I don't know why you mentioned it.
I'll try to restrict myself in the future. All right, any final questions or comments? Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, happy Thanksgiving, Elisa. All right, bye-bye, thank you.